All right. Thank you again for joining us today. My name is Jennifer Renix. I am the Policy and Communications Director for the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, and I will be facilitating today's telepress conference focusing on yesterday's decision from Duke Energy Florida, focusing on the decision to cancel plans for the Levy County Nuclear Reactor Project. Today we're going to be joined by the following four speakers: Stephen Smith, Executive Director with the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy; Peter Bradford, an adjunct professor at Vermont Law School and former member of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission; Sarah Barzak, who is High Risk Energy Director with Southern Alliance for Clean Energy; and George Kavros, who is the Florida Energy Policy Attorney with Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. I'm going to allow a few minutes here for each speaker to offer brief comments. We are in listen-only mode, but as I said, we will open the lines again in a few minutes for questions from reporters on this call, and thank you so much for joining us. Now I'm going to turn the teleconference over to Stephen Smith. Stephen.
Thank you, Jen, and good morning. Thanks, everyone, for joining us here to receive our perspective on this important decision. My name is Stephen Smith, and I'm the Executive Director of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. Yesterday's news is really a mixed bag for, I believe, Florida consumers. On the one hand, I think that the decision, as I've said, I think consumers should rejoice that the fleecing will end by one of the companies in this long and unfortunate chapter in Florida energy history where utilities have conspired with the legislature and the Public Service Commission to take advantage of Florida consumers. And the fact that Duke came in, took a fresh perspective, looking at what had been set into motion by Progress Energy and decided that they were prepared to stop this, I think is good news. The bad news about all of this is clearly that consumers have paid literally billions of dollars for a facility that they are going to get no value from, that the other major utility in the state of Florida, Florida Power and Light, is continuing on with this scheme to fleece ratepayers around this particular provision, and that the Florida legislature, the Florida Public Service Commission, and the state's utilities have actually been part of this grand scheme to really defraud ratepayers of their money. And so when that reality sets in, I think that that is a very unfortunate day for and shows the ongoing dysfunction of how energy policy is being managed in the state of Florida. Clearly, our organization from the very beginning has been very concerned about this. We opposed the law back in 2006 when it was passed. We have been active before the commission every year during the prudency review, and several of the speakers have actually been part of that process as expert witnesses, and we've been very aggressive in those proceedings, questioning the need for these plants, the way that the money is being collected, and a whole host of issues. After a number of years, through great frustration, we even appealed the provisions of this law to the Florida Supreme Court, asking for them to review this. And in the past legislative session, we were able to work with a small group of legislative representatives to basically pass a modest change to the law, and that modest change is even cited by Duke as one of the reasons why they're pulling the plug. I don't believe it's that the law was overwhelmingly strong. I think that this scheme was so overwhelmingly weak that once the utility saw that they really couldn't with any certainty be able to continue to fleece the ratepayers, they decided to back away. So where do we go from here? There's still a number of very important questions that are still, the devil is in the details. Duke Energy is going to continue to collect at a minimum of $3.45 a month on 1,000 kilowatt hours going forward. We don't know if that's the right number. We honestly have not done the analysis, and because we have no confidence in the Florida Public Service Commission's ability to look out for ratepayers, we are calling for a great deal of scrutiny to be looked at whether that's the right number. We've never supported the early cost recovery from the very beginning, and as I said, we fought it all through the history of this particular provision. But we also recognize that the reality of where we are today, we have two utilities that have put together this scheme. We have a legislature and a public service commission that has been part of it, and we want to make sure that there is an exit strategy that works, because the only thing worse than trying to shut down the cost recovery is in some way to allow the utilities to continue to perpetuate this scheme going forward. So we want there to be a viable exit strategy so that utilities can unwind these projects and get back to the business at hand, which should be providing good value for services that are actually delivered at a reliable and affordable cost, and that there is a policy in the state for diversifying the portfolio but not embracing high-risk energy choices like nuclear power. So there needs to be an exit plan. We support that. All eyes now should turn to Florida Power and Light. There's absolutely no reason why they should be allowed to go forward. If it's good enough for Duke Energy to continue to pursue their combined operating license or their COL at the expense of the shareholders, there's no reason that why Florida Power and Light can't do the same. And we believe that next week's hearings, we need to really focus in on why Florida Power and Light thinks that they, while everyone else is clearing the playing field, can continue to perpetuate this scheme, this fleecing of ratepayers going forward. And we call on the commission and the legislature to stay vigilant, not that they have been, but they need to be vigilant and bring this to an end with Florida Power and Light so we can completely close this chapter on this particular history. So let me stop there. I look forward to the Q&A, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Steve. Our second speaker is Peter Bradford, currently an adjunct professor at Vermont Law School. Mr. Bradford served as a commissioner on the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission and also has served as expert witness in previous nuclear cost recovery dockets before the Florida Public Service Commission, where he first pointed out that the levy units were uneconomic in his testimony during the certification proceedings as far back as 2008. Mr. Bradford.
Thanks very much. It's naked emperor time in Tallahassee now. As with all such stories, it's only when the emperor acknowledges the nakedness and silences the cheerleaders that it becomes possible for him to get dressed and move on. The good news in yesterday's announcement is severalfold. First, no more customer money will be spent on nuclear plants that have clearly been uneconomic since the day they were first proposed. Second, Florida can now turn to climate change solutions that promise much greater greenhouse gas reduction much sooner and less expensively than the reactors would have achieved. Third, the job gains from substituting lower cost and locally produced power supply for job-killing rate increases will now begin. And finally, the folly of shifting risk away from investors who are well-positioned to assess and manage it onto customers and regulators who are not is clear for all to see and should shape future power supply planning in Florida and in other states. Contrary to Duke's recent announcement, this is not a story of regulatory uncertainty. The NRC and especially the Florida PUC have been fully supportive of everything Duke and its predecessor have sought. The Florida legislature has even unseated every PUC commissioner who dared to doubt the wisdom of new nuclear construction. There is no regulatory uncertainty in the story. The nuclear renaissance also consisted of the number of plants that government was willing to build, either by shifting risk to customers through early cost recovery laws, or by shifting risk to taxpayers through loan guarantees and other direct subsidies. Bit by bit, the excessive cost and lackadaisical management that go hand in hand with this approach taking their toll. Only a handful of the 31 original Renaissance units in the U.S. retain any prospect being built. In the last month alone, EDF has pulled out of the U.S. market, preferring to seek massive subsidy from the more nuclear-friendly British government. And Duke canceled construction of the Harris plants in North Carolina, as well as the Levy units. Despite the immense waste of money, the good news is that Duke's Florida territory can at long last turn its full attention to more sensible solutions. Better late than never. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter. Now we'll hear briefly from Sarah Barzak, who is the High Risk Energy Director with Southern Alliance for Clean Energy.
Thank you, Jen. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. My name is Sarah Barzak, the High Risk Energy Choices Program Director with Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. Duke Energy announced the cancellation of the two-reactor Levy County proposal in Florida in the same week as major delays were announced for Duke's proposed Lee reactors in South Carolina, and serious problems continue with the lead reactor project in the country, Southern Company's Plant Vogtle in neighboring Georgia. The proposed Levy County reactors that were initially offered up and pursued by Progress Energy Florida represent the epitome of cost overruns, delays, and regulatory bungling. Levy has been a poster child for several years now of all that is wrong with pursuing new nuclear reactors. And unfortunately, ratepayers in Florida are the ones that ultimately suffered and will continue to suffer as long as this unfair nuclear cost recovery statute is on the books. Florida's families, businesses, and others have had to hand over their hard-earned dollars to a big power company for something that they never actually committed to build in the first place. And we believe this is the same situation with Florida Power and Light's proposal to build two reactors at their existing Turkey Point plant near Miami. And all the while, the power companies, the Florida Public Service Commission, and the state legislature knew that if these projects were abandoned or canceled, there would be no refunds for customers. It really is very sad in a way that it took a utility from outside of Florida who recently inherited this mess, in this case Duke, to make the right decision to finally read the tea leaves and pull the plug on this boondoggle versus past and present Florida governors, much of the Florida State Legislature, and the Florida Public Service Commission year after year. For years, very few holding office in Florida were looking out for Floridians. Hopefully the tide is finally turning, and hopefully elected officials and regulators across the region in Georgia, South Carolina, and elsewhere pay attention to this debacle in Florida and chart a new course so as to protect consumers before it is too late. Thank you.
And thank you, Sarah. We're going to conclude the opening portion of this call with a brief statement from George Kavros, who is the Florida Energy Policy Attorney for the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. George?
Good morning, everyone. I wanted just to add a little bit of process and substance to what took place yesterday. Duke Energy Florida, late yesterday, filed a motion asking the commission to approve what's called a revised and restated settlement agreement, which actually replaces and supplants the settlement agreement that was approved in 2012. And the parties to that were Duke Energy Florida, the Office of Public Counsel, and some others. The settlement agreement also was attached to the motion, as was a petition for a limited proceeding to approve the new settlement agreement. That's an expedited process that the company is asking for, where this could come before the commission by the end of the year and be approved. In terms of substance, the company has officially canceled Levy. They state in the agreement that DEF will be terminating the engineering procurement contract. It was previously suspended, and they say that DEF will exercise the provision of Section 366.93, subsection 6, and will elect not to complete the construction of Levy. That's the subsection in the early cost recovery law that has been referred to earlier that allows a company, if they choose to abandon the project, to recover all pre-construction and construction costs. Additionally, they plan to, in terms of closing out Levy reactor, as was mentioned earlier, there will be a $3.45 charge on residential bills for customers that use 1,000 kilowatt hours a month, and that charge will remain in place through 2017, so the company can recover approximately $350 million. And the company estimates that is what it will cost to to close out the Levy Reactor project. And lastly, the company is going to continue to pursue combined operating license. But those costs after 2013 will be on the shareholders' dime. And they will account for those costs in 2014 and beyond as construction work in progress, but it will be removed from recovery from the nuclear cost recovery docket. And only in the event the company uses the COL to construct a nuclear facility at some point in the future at the Levy site, Duke Energy will actually be permitted to seek recovery of these post-2013 costs, including a rate of return for their shareholders. And this was a global agreement. It included provisions for a few other things as well. It was 39 pages long, but just wanted to give you an update on the Levy provisions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, George, and thanks to each of our speakers. We will now open the lines for a question and answer session for the reporters who are joining us today. For this session, we're also joined by Susan Glickman, who is a consultant and lobbyist for the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, and also Mark Cooper, a senior fellow at the Institute for Energy and the Environment at the Vermont Law School, and who has also testified at several Florida Public Service Commission hearings pertinent to this case. So if you are with the media and have a question for our speakers, please press star 6 to unmute your lines, and then if you state your name and affiliation as you answer your question, that would be great. Do we have any questions here?
Yeah, hi. This is Bill Freeburn calling from Platts. I just had a quick question about the process. Is there a chance to reopen this, to resume official construction and recovery under the nuclear cost recovery clause? What would it take for them to resume this project once perhaps they get a COL or something?
Well, George, let me take a piece of that, and then George, you can answer. This is Stephen Smith. We are pretty confident that there's been a little bit of, I think, sort of misinformation that is bannering around. We do not believe that Duke could actually, because there's been a statement that we've seen in some comments that if they wanted to pursue, say, a small modular reactor using the same combined operating license at the Levy site, that somehow or another they may be able to do that, or they could, you know, potentially go to another reactor. We do not believe that that is legal under the NRC provisions, and it's pretty clear that it's technology bound, so that they have gotten, they were pursuing a combined operating license for the AP1000 reactors that were going to represent the two reactors that have been under discussion for years. So in theory, I guess if they wanted to reopen discussions and about an AP1000 and they had gotten the combined operating license, they could do that. One of the things that we're very concerned about, and we're pretty confident this is the way, normally a utility in Florida has to go through what's called a needs determination to justify the ability to get cost recovery. We are assuming, although we're still seeking clarification on this, that this settlement agreement that Duke has basically given up the historic need determination that they went through back in 2006-07 timeframe, and that if they were to try to reopen it, they would have to go back before the commission and make the case that the need exists. We have for a long time, from the very beginning, our organization with several of the people on this phone call who have been expert witnesses and other have questioned whether the market conditions had not changed so dramatically and that there weren't other viable low-cost, low-risk options, that the need determination was not the historic need determination for this plant was not justified. So we would anticipate, one, they cannot transfer the COL to another technology, and two, that if they do want to pursue a nuclear reactor of this type, they're going to have to come back and make the case that Florida actually needs the power and is the most cost-effective way to do it, and we think it's very unlikely they'll be able to do that.
Thanks.
Jim Polson at Bloomberg, I have one question. This agreement, as I understand it, also streamlines their ability to either buy or build gas generation that would replace CR3 and CR1 and 2 and potentially the output from Levy. From the standpoint of clean energy, how do you view that?
Well, the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy believes that what is fundamentally missing in the planning process in Florida is a best practice planning tool called integrated resource planning. Florida is the only state in the Southeast that doesn't do integrated resource planning, and that if we were to have a comprehensive look at both supply side and demand side options, we believe that there would be a balance struck between only pursuing gas and also looking at alternatives like robust energy efficiency programs and also technologies in the renewable space, particularly solar. So while we welcome the fact that they're letting go of the nuclear ambition and we don't support coal, we understand that gas has a role to play. We believe that those types of decisions should go through an integrated planning process, and that we believe that energy efficiency should carry a much bigger portion of meeting any future demand, and that renewable technologies are coming in the money, and that the state of Florida should be much more aggressive in pursuing those so they have a diverse portfolio. Florida is long in gas now, and I think only pursuing gas is not the right decision. Using the tools of energy efficiency and renewables is a way to diversify that portfolio so you get a better balance.
Hi, Matt Bannick from SNL. I was hoping for a clarification on what exactly Duke's going to be trying to recover. George, I think, said that the companies can recover he's going to try to cover $350 million to close out the Levy project. But in an email from the Southern Alliance, mentioned that they've spent $962 million, but they have not yet recovered that. So I was just wondering if you could break down those numbers there. What's the difference there? Thank you.
Sure. According to a public commission that testimony in this year's docket, they stated that the utility has spent about $962 million on the Levy project so far. The dollars yet to be recovered is an estimate, of course, but DEF offers the estimate of $350 million, and that is the estimate that's included in the revised and restated settlement agreement. So, if you add those two figures together, you're close to about $1.3 billion total that would have been spent so far that we know of, according to projections at the current time, for a facility that generated no power at all.
So can they can't collect the 962, but they will collect or try to collect 350?
Yeah, well, actually, to a large degree, they have collected a lot of this, and I apologize if in the news release was a little was not clear. They go to the commission every year to recover, certain costs, and these costs are ongoing. So it's not clear that they have recovered all of these costs because they were going to come into this year's proceeding asking for recovery again of certain costs. So whatever they're planning to recover this year, they're not going to recover because they've asked for the they've asked for a deferral until next year's docket. Presumably, the file testimony that will is consistent with them closing out the plant. So I would say that they've recovered very close to that amount, and also have an additional $350 million that they're estimating that will close out the plant.
So the $350 comes on top of what they've already requested, then?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
This is Justin Bachman at Business Week. Just to follow up on that line of questioning, what efforts have been discussed or contemplated for ratepayers who are unhappy about the whole situation as far as the ability to maybe not get what's been recovered in the past but the future costs and just prevent that from happening?
Well, unfortunately, I believe that the advocates for the consumers have not been as strong as they need to be. There is an Office of Public Counsel that is supposed to be looking out for consumers, and they've been some of the first to enter into these settlement agreements. And so we have not seen strong consumer advocacy. SACE has played somewhat of a role in that, and we've been very clear in trying to end this law as a fleecing of consumers. As I said in my opening comments, we will look at and scrutinize the best we can the $3.45. At some level, organizationally, you would ask that the Public Service Commission should be a strong advocate and protector of the public interest here. And that's where the dysfunction that is so prevalent in Florida is so transparent, is that the commission has largely done nothing but rubber stamp what the companies want and has been a co-conspirator in this fraud. And so it is unclear that there is a strong consumer advocate that's going to step forward. We will do what we can, but ultimately our goal has been, as best possible, just end this hemorrhage and stop this law, because is where the majority has been happening.
This is Mark Cooper. Can I add something here?
Sure.
There are a couple of principles that need to be applied to this problem. Florida made this commitment, and these are sunk costs. And so it's going to be very difficult to avoid the sunk costs, but there are ways to minimize the impact. One of which is a lot of the difficulties that the project got into were the result of inadequate design, going through revisions, which may not be the responsibility of the utility. And we see litigation in other states. It may be time for Duke to litigate against the vendors here. And so there should be a careful examination of that question. Second of all, to the extent that there are costs that have been sitting out there, and you will recall that as the sums of money spent increased and political opposition grew, the utility said, okay, we won't take as much money as we should right now. We'll push it off. And so we need to look very hard at those decisions, which were voluntary decisions by the utility, and maybe not covered by the cost recovery statute. There's a legal question about that. And third, to the extent that there are costs sitting out there, we need to get them amortized and off the backs of the ratepayers as quickly as possible. While that makes the front end a little bit more painful, it definitely shrinks the total amount that ratepayers have to pay. And finally, let's be clear. Yes, we have sunk $1.5 billion into this reactor. That is infinitely better than wasting tens of billions of dollars, which is what the utility was proposing to do.
Great. Thanks.
I think one thing worth mentioning, this is Susan Glickman, and I'm also with Southern Alliance for Clean Energy and was in and lobby on behalf of Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. So on Monday, there is the nuclear cost recovery docket begins, and Florida Power and Light and Duke have filed briefs stating they don't think that the law that was passed in the most recent legislature, which put some other process levers, which George and Mark and Peter and others may want to elaborate on, but they're already arguing that that shouldn't be applied in this docket, and that is an amount to the tune of $2.4 million to Florida Power and Light. So on Monday, there'll be, I think, sort of an interesting follow-up that it would be, I'm just flagging for all of you to be paying attention to.
Susan, do we have other questions?
Yeah, this is Bill Freeburn at Platts again. Just one follow-up on what was said about the taking on sort of the Turkey Point project. What is this ACE plan to do specifically to prevent Florida Power and Light from continuing to recover its Turkey Point 6-7 costs?
Well, again, we feel very strongly that FP&L needs to come forth next week and explain why, given what's happening with Duke, they need to continue to pursue the Turkey Point reactor. The Duke has said that the COL license that they're looking to have in their pocket can be paid for by their shareholders as a shareholder expense because it's an option for the company. And we see no rationale why FP&L shouldn't step up and do the same thing. And we believe that FP&L has been very much a conspirator in this, and we think now it's time for them to come clean. So we are going to be present at the hearings next week. We think those hearings should go forward. And we think that the commission should have some really tough questions for the company, why the market dynamics in one part of the state are not relevant to them, and why they can't basically release the consumers and ratepayers of Florida from this this ill-founded law. And And basically, they should apply what the commission, I mean, what the legislature did in a modest fashion and not be able to circumvent that law. That law does apply, we believe, in this session and applies for FP&L this year. So we're going to argue forcefully for that. So it's unclear. I think FP&L is a little bit nervous going into the hearings because obviously they're the last one standing, and it really puts the spotlight on them. And we think that we look forward to the day that they're going to join with Duke and actually do what's right for consumers.
Just one follow-up. You said that shareholders have to pay for the COL, but I thought George said that they could, that they would qualify the COL cost as QIP. Doesn't that allow them to recover it in a different way?
Well, only if they basically are going, my understanding, George, you chime in here, but my understanding is only if they go to pursue a reactor and it comes to actually exist, which is, you know, really the way it should work. You shouldn't be charging ratepayers for things that don't exist and don't provide service to them. And so if for some reason the Duke was sometime in the future able to actually secure the COL and actually build the plant, then they could go back and recover these costs. But we believe that that is highly unlikely, and so the shareholders are carrying that risk until the plant actually is developed.
This is Mark Cooper again, and this is a really important point as we wander around in the weeds here. What has happened in Florida is that the insanity of advanced cost recovery has been revealed. Peter said it's the emperor has no close time. So what you have with the modifications in the statute and with this this settlement is a restoration of the way it's supposed to work, where stockholders have the responsibility, bear the risk, and ratepayers are protected. And we haven't gotten all the way back to what the system that worked well for a long time in America, but we've gotten a long way back. And so going forward, the notion that utilities are going to try and undertake these projects without having a great deal of risk has suffered a major blow here in the context of the broad issues that are affecting the national debate about nuclear power.
Hey, can I get, this is Jonathan Shapiro from WABE, the NPR station in Atlanta. I wanted to get you guys to weigh in on what you think the effect of this, the Duke decision is going to be on the Plant Vogtle project in eastern Georgia.
Steve,
well,
this is Sarah. Do you want me to take that, or do you want to comment?
Yeah,
and then?
Well, go ahead. Go ahead and take a shot at it, Sarah. I'll follow up.
Hi, Jonathan. Thanks for joining the call. This is Sarah Barzak with SAFE. Well, I think the situation in Georgia, as you know, is rather complicated given some of the developments in this 8th Vogtle construction monitoring docket. Florida passed their cost recovery law prior to the Georgia legislature, 2006 versus 2009. So there's been more of a history in Florida than in Georgia, and the Public Service Commission in Georgia needs to take note of what is going on in Florida. We've made that argument as an intervener in the past, as have some others. And, you know, the as I said before, the poster child of what can go wrong with these high-risk, high-capital-cost projects like Levy, you know, Levy is it. Vogtle 3 and 4 are now moving in a direction in which we clearly know that there are significant cost overruns, potentially a chunk more depending on how the litigation goes, and then very serious schedule delays. So the Georgia Public Service Commission has to wake up and pay attention to what happens when regulators ignore the writing on the wall. You know, Vogtle is in a much different stage. They've got people on the ground. They're working. They've got components ordered. They're well into the EPC. But consumers are at risk. Georgia Power ratepayers are at risk there unless the PSC pays attention. And some of the recent, you know, happenings just this week at the Georgia Public Service Commission are troubling because it looks like the Georgia Power, Southern Company's largest subsidiary, is going to be able to sort of kick the can down the road and potentially not address some of these issues until Vogtle 3, the first of the new two reactors, is finished. And that's too long for consumers to know, you know, how much are they going to be on the hook.
Yeah, and I would just add, this is Steve with SAFE, that we have argued, and I've told Tom Fanning at Southern Company this directly, that we believe that Southern is betting on the wrong horses in their 21st century energy plan. And I think with the ongoing collapse of the nuclear renaissance, and which further isolates Southern's decision to sort of bet the ranch on Vogtle, I think it's going to become more and more clear that that was a bad decision for consumers, and that the more cost-effective ways to have a balanced portfolio, including energy efficiency and renewable energy, and we're seeing the commission become more aggressive in Georgia in requiring the company to support things like solar power with the most recent IRP ruling. We believe that the Levy example is just another example of why that is the wrong bet, and they're betting on the wrong horse, and that the Georgia consumers are going to suffer for that. But, you know, as Sarah said, they're further down the tracks here, and they're actually building, and it just makes it harder to be able to rein that in.
Do you think the way that Florida approached its quip will have any effect in Georgia?
Well, given this is Sarah Barzak again. Given that there was, as you know, legislation introduced in the Georgia session by Representative Jeff Chapman, a fiscally conservative Republican, you know, it didn't get that far in the Georgia legislature, but it gained some momentum. I think they're going to point to Levy. The proponents of his bill are going to point to Levy and the debacles happening in the nuclear industry overall, and make a bigger push for that in the 2014 legislative session. So, you know, I think now, as I said, Florida started down this road first with the passage of the cost recovery statute within a larger energy bill back in 2006, and then South Carolina was next, then North Carolina, and then on to Georgia. So, you know, if Florida is the weather vane, so to speak, legislators in other states, especially Georgia, need to wake up and realize they supported the wrong entity back when they passed these anti-consumer laws. They got wooed by the big power companies and ignored the fact that their constituents are going to suffer.
Southern still maintains that this is going to be the most cost-effective power generator for the lifespan of the project by billions of dollars. How do you respond to that?
Well, I don't. This is. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I was just going to say two quick things. One, I don't think that it's accurate. I think that if you basically look at where we are with gas prices and the trends, both in efficiency and renewables, cost points coming down, I think Georgia Power is projecting out into the future where they claim that they're going to get some of those benefits, and I just don't think that that's going to hold up with the trend lines that we're seeing with these other technologies and the trend lines upward for nuclear power. The other important thing, and I want to go back to something Mark Cooper said that I think is potentially alive in Georgia, is that, you know, the shareholders have shed, and the companies have protected their shareholders and shed all this risk onto the backs of consumers. Ironically, the governor of Georgia the other day implied that maybe some of these cost overruns should be borne back by the shareholders. And I think that and we would strongly support that. I think that if this is such a good deal and Georgia Power has made the assumptions that they can get the prices in on schedule and on budget and all these other kind of things, that the commission ought to start forcing the overruns onto the backs of the shareholders, because that's the way it should be, because customers should know that if they're going to get, you know, signed up for this, that there's some end at the fleecing that goes on with these big projects. And so Tom Fanning was on a earnings call the other day basically saying, you know, the governor misspoke. We don't anticipate the governor's really going to insist. We don't anticipate the commission's going to really make our shareholders carry this burden. But I actually think that in the spirit of what Mark said, that these guys get a huge rate of return for these projects over a long period of time, and yet they've shed all the risk. And we think that risk should go back on the shareholders, and it would temper the companies in going down these high-risk roads.
Let me respond to this specific claim that nuclear is less costly. I recently testified in South Carolina, filed testimony in the Utah court case. The simple fact of the matter is that nobody else on the planet believes that nuclear is less costly than a whole boatload of alternatives. Now, you can keep saying that, but it's not true, and the ratepayers of Georgia will pay tens of billions of dollars more for their electricity than they should have, and that states around them are paying. And they can keep saying it. It's not true. It's based on erroneous assumptions that nobody else on the planet believes.
This is Peter Bradford. I think it's worth maybe taking Mark's point a step further and just looking at the types of assumptions that underlie the Southern's claims here. They tend to understate the price of nuclear. They tend to overstate the likely price of gas. And they also overstate the value of dollars of benefits many years in the future. I mean, the actual value of a dollar of benefits in the 40th year is probably somewhere between 2 and 6 cents today, if you use realistic discount, which they do not. They also assume 60 years of operation, and as we're seeing with the closure of nuclear plants already in 2013, we've never had a nuclear unit get to year 60. They assume that the plants will run upwards of 90%. of the time. We've never had nuclear units achieve lifetime factors in excess of 90%. So as Mark says, no one believes it. And when you look behind the assumptions that underlie the claim of billions of dollars of benefits over the lifetime for reactors, you find assumptions that any self-respecting economist would laugh away.
Other questions? Okay, well, if there's no additional questions, again, I want to thank everyone for joining and thank all of our speakers for sharing their insights. And we're going to continue to, as an organization, stay very actively involved in these proceedings. We encourage everyone to pay close attention to what plays out next week. And I think there's a lot of questions that Board of Power and Light needs to answer in response to this. And we are hopeful that in the near future they will also end this charade and begin to protect consumers, that our Public Service Commission in Florida will act in the defense of consumers as opposed to being a captive agent of their companies, and that we'll see some rationality return to Florida and begin to get the right balance that will allow Florida to move forward in the future. So again, thank you for your questions and your time, and we stand ready to help you in any way we can in the future.
And if there are future queries about this or any of our other energy policy work, please feel free to reach us at the SACE Media Line at area code 865-235-1448. Thank you very much for attending our call today.
Thank you.
Thank you.